So we left off last week. And it's anything yet. We left off last week. We began to discuss a little bit about the text of the Prusbul itself. So we mentioned the standard, conventional type of Prusbul in terms of actually writing the Prusbul to the Dayanim themselves in the presence of the Dayanim. Then we mentioned the somewhat newfangled Prusbul to get around some of the basic Choshev issues. So to write the Prusbul rather than from the Dayanim, rather than from the Edim, but in the text, refer to the Dayanim with the Dayanim Chashuvim. So Eilev and Eilev, two different Prusbuls, and again, each of them has its pluses and its minuses, and clearly the Halacha, we would accept both of these types of Prusbuls. There is a third type of Prusbul which is out there, which you probably won't see in America. If you happen to be in Eretz Yisrael in the next 2 weeks, you may see it floating around in Yerushalayim. It's the text of the Prusbul that the Badatz uses, which is a little bit of a chiddush, a little bit different than the regular standard Prusbul, based on the following, that there is an opinion in Rishonim that seems to maintain that when we speak about Prusbul handing over the Chovos to the Beis Din, so handing over isn't just symbolically handing over, like hocus pocus, we write in a document, I'm hereby handing my Chovos over. It has to be a halachic handing over. It has to be what we call a haknos achov, that we have to literally, in a sense, sell the Chov to the Beis Din. Again, it doesn't mean that the Beis Din is then going to actually do your literal dirty work for you. It is, in a certain sense, symbolic, but according to at least one opinion of Rishonim, it would appear that there has to be a formal, official acquisition of the Chov based on the rules of Chashem Mishpat of Dinei Mamonos in order for a Prusbul to be valid. If such an opinion would be accepted, what would that mean practically? How do you go ahead and sell your Chov to Beis Din? So that's a tough thing in terms of Chashem Mishpat, but how to sell a Chov, especially a Chov Ba'al Peh, a Chov which doesn't have a document to it in the first place. It's a complicated sugya of mine, with Shloshton and Agav and Chalit, a lot of different permutations as to how to sell such a chov. Probably the only way that would be realistic in this type of a setting would be invoking the principle of Kinyan Agav. So Kinyan Agav means that if I want to sell you a piece of land, and not only do I want to sell you land, I want to sell you some movable property also, some metaltolin. So all you have to do is make a kinyan, you have to make an acquisition, a formal acquisition on the karka, and agav the karka, so and together with the karka, you're going to acquire the metaltolin, the movable object as well. So at least according to one Dan Tosus, that would work for a chov. If I want to sell you a chov, so I would have to sell you a little piece of karka, and agav that little piece of karka, I can now sell you the chov, and now it's your chov, and you can go and collect, in a sense, on behalf of yourself. So if one accepts this view in shown him that you have to have haknas achov, so then you would have to stipulate this in the Prusbul that the Malva is actually selling to the Beis Din. Beis Din is getting the real estate business now. We have to sell karka to the Beis Din, that the Beis Din should acquire a shtickle of my karka, and agav that karka, they should acquire the chov as well. So this opinion does appear in some Rishonim. It generally wasn't accepted lahalacha. That we don't find any mention of this in the Shulchan Aruch itself, in the Ramah, the Shach, Taz, the regular. We're not going to find it in the Taz on the bottom of Cheshbon. The Smad, the Shach, where the dinim of Prusbul appears. So this is not really mentioned in the conventional poskim. Generally, most of the Rishonim seem to assume that the Mesira Sachov doesn't mean Haknas Sachov. Mesira means a statement, a verbal, written statement called Mesira Sachov. That's good enough. Nevertheless, in Yerushalayim, this goes back a couple of years ago, I don't mean last Shemitah, it was 80, 100 years ago, whatever it was. So the Dayanim in Yerushalayim instituted in the Nusach of the Prusbul that you should incorporate the sheet. There should be Cheshish for the sheet, and therefore the text of the Prusbul that was being authored by the Badatz already quite a few years has included this line of Haknas HaKarka. That means the Malva makes, and the Imam should make a Kinyan Sudar with the Beis, and the Beis acquires a piece of this person of the Malva's Karka, thereby acquiring the Chov. So this particular innovation was highly questionable. That Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva that he thinks that this innovation not only is not necessary, but he thinks that it may disqualify the entire Prusbul. So it's not what we have. We'll talk about what we have in our Prusbul. It's a different twist. But Rav Moshe had serious concerns with this innovation because he thought that it throws into question the validity of the Prusbul. Why is that? So Rav Moshe said the idea of a Prusbul is that the Dayanim are not the Bali Din. That means the Dayanim are acting b'Torah's based when they go ahead and collect the Chov. So the Torah says Yisr, or the Dinim of Shemitah's Ksafim only apply to the Malv himself. But Lo Yigo says Re'eu, I'm not allowed to collect Mechol, but the Bezin's allowed to. So that's only true if the Bezin are an objective party. If the Bezin is a third party, I'm handing over my Chol to the Bezin for them to go and collect it, go collect the Chol. But if they become the Baldin, so then it can't be a Bezin. You can't be a party to the case and also be a Dayan on the case. That's not fair. That's not acceptable. So if I'm Matan Chov and Chashem Mishpah to the Dayanim, stay Chov now. So now, they're the Baldin. So then, how can it be a Bezin? How can you wear two hats at the same time? Be a Baldin and be a Dayan? The whole thing is a fraud. The whole thing isn't true. So Ramesh said, therefore, he thought this was a very bad idea. He thought this is a Chumrah that undermines the entire concept of the Prozbul itself. So there was a correspondence between Ramesh Feinstein and Dayan Weiss. Dayan Weiss, Mechaz Yitzchok, was the head of the Eidah Haredes. So Ramesh wrote this tshuva saying that he doesn't approve of this practice of the principles of the Badatz. And Dayan Weiss wrote Ramesh back a tshuva saying that to defend where it comes from, that it's not considered to be a real haknah, which is of course a funny thing. If it's not a real haknah, what are you doing in the first place? So the Mechaz Yitzchok is trying to explain why it's not a real haknah to disqualify the principle, but it's a good thing to do, and therefore we should follow the minhag of the Badatz. So Elav Elav getting different opinions in the Gedolei HaPoskim in the last generation, whether we should advocate this writing of the principle of the Badatz, or we should dafka frown upon this principle. In America, I've not seen this principle. I don't think anybody here uses this principle in Yerushalayim, and if anyone's going to be in Yerushalayim for Shoshana, you can take a look, see whether you see one of them floating around. I think Adayam Azeh, I think the Badatz actually uses this particular prosbul. The Mechaz Yitzchok quotes at the end of a tshuva, a very humorous incident that took place concerning this prosbul. He writes that when the Briska Rav arrived in Eretz Yisrael, so the Briska Rav was able to escape Mamish in the middle of the war, so he arrived in Eretz Yisrael, I think in 1941, if I'm not mistaken. So I made the calculation, the first Shemitah after that was 1945. So the advice writes that the Briska Rav lived in Geula, he lived across the street from what used to be the Edison Theater. So there was an up on the side of Kikar Shabbat. So the Briska Rav came to the Badatz, across the street, came to the Badatz to write a prosbul. So here he was coming not as the Rav, he was coming not as a Rashi, he was coming as a Balabas to write a prosbul. So he comes to the Dayanim of the Badatz, ready to write a prosbul. So they hand him the text of the prosbul. So the Briska Rav looks at it, holds it upside down. So he said three words. He says, Vos is das? He says, what is it? He never heard of such a thing. What kind of principle is this? He said, where did this come from? So he said, I came from Brisk. My father was Rav Chaim. We never wrote such principles. We wrote like it says in Shulchan Aruch, like it says in the Rambam, like the Mishnah. Mosmanu lechem ploni, shebayonim shemokom ploni, da-da-da-da-da-da. That's it. There's no cross card. He didn't know what was going on. So the Dayanim and the Badatz explained to him that when you're in Brisk, you do like you're in Brisk. When you're in Shalayim, you look in Yerushalayim. So he said, the Minig Yerushalayim is to write this principle. So when the Brisk Rav was very taken aback, so one of the Dayanim, Rav Pinchas Epstein, he was the head of the Badatz at the time in the 1940s. So he said to the Briska Rav very quickly, he said to him, Rabbeinu Garshim, Rabbeinu Garshim in Bavabasra. So Rabbeinu Garshim, so if you take a look in the Chav Chav Zayin in Bavabasra, there's one line Rabbeinu Garshim wrote a running page on the side of the Gemara that we have on a couple of Masechtas that we have it on Bavabasra. So on the bottom of Chav Zayin in Bavabasra, the letters are so small, but if you look with your microscope, so you'll notice that there's a line in Rabbeinu Garshim where Sugya Prusbul comes up. Rabbeinu Garshim Taka says it. He Taka says that they have to have a Knos Achov. So Rabbeinu Garshim, okay. So the Briska Rav Mestama would have responded to him, but nobody else says it. The Ram doesn't say it. The Shulchan doesn't say it. Nobody else says it. So it's not our minig. So again, in Yerushalayim, that is the minig, I think, out of Yom Hazan, out of Yerushalayim, or in Chutzlaitz for sure. I don't think anybody writes such puzzles. I don't know. I think at the end of it, I wasn't there. So. Inner workings of the exciting things going on in Rachel Strauss, you know.
So that you have to own a piece of property.
Right, if you don't, right. Right, you can, right. So we're going to get to the owning property from the Lova's angle a little bit later, but this is the twist, this is a quirk of owning property from the Malva's angle. When exactly is the Prusbul supposed to be written? So, the answer to that question is, just push the question back a little bit, when exactly does Shemitah's Ksafim take place? So we know when Shemitah's Ksafim takes place. The Pasuk Chumash, Miketz Sheva Shanim Taseh Shemitah. So we know what Miketz means. Vahim Miketz Nasayim Miketz means the Ketz, means the end of. So that's what everybody says, that the Pashas and the Halacha is, that Miketz Sheva Shanim Taseh Shemitah, at the end of the Shemitah year, that's when the Halacha of Shemitah's Ksafim kicks in, and therefore the Prusbul would have to be written before that. So there is an opinion of the Rosh, it appears in the fourth bracha of Masechus Gittin, based on a Tosefta, which on this question was a Tosofer. So if it was a Tosofer, then we'd have to deal with it. But the Rosh dealt with it. So the Rosh does an article in In Chavrusa, I don't know if anyone noticed, Rav Shech just wrote an article in Chavrusa magazine a couple of days ago where he speaks about whether one is mechuyev to be choshesh for shitas that are based on mistaken girsas. So this was his example, one of the examples of a shita that may be based on a toast. So the Rosh claims that the Tosefta says that the din of Shemitah's Ksafim doesn't really happen at the end of the Shemitah year. It happens in two different stages, because the truth is that there are two different parts of Shemitah's Ksafim. That there's one aspect of Shemitah's Ksafim, which is an Isser. It means the Malv is not allowed to collect. He's not allowed to come and press the person to come and ask for the Chov. And number two, in terms of Chashim Mishpat, that the Chov disappears. That means the Lov is not chayav to pay anymore. So those are two different halachas. So the Rosh writes that he thinks we can distinguish chronologically between the two, that there's a year gap between these two different halachas. That at the beginning of the Shemitah year, once last Rosh Hashanah comes, there's already an Isser on the Malva. The Malva is not allowed to go and collect this Chov, but the Chov is not cancelled yet. The Chov is still there. The Lova really is supposed to pay it up. And if the Lova pays it up, the Malva just takes it and finishes. So the Chov is there, but the Malva is not allowed to ask for it. What happens at the end of the Shemitah year, says the Rosh, is that's when the Chov Mamash disappears. That's when the Chashim Mishpat kicks in. So in the sense of the Issa Veheter angle of Shemitah, that already started. We're already 11 and a half months too late for that. That was last Rosh Hashanah. But the end of the Shemitah year, that's when the Chov is canceled. How in the world did the Rosh know that? Briskavar, two halachas, and they're separated by time. So he tries to show you in the Pesukim where this comes from. So he says, Miket Sheva Shanim Tasa Shemitah. Yeah, that's true. Shamal Kobal Masha, that's true. But the end of the Pasuk is, Lo Yigal Sisrael Yasachit Ki Kora Shemitah Lashem. So Kara Shemitah means, the beginning of the Shemitah, means Shemitah has arrived. Ki Kara Shemitah Lashem. So you wouldn't say in a week, 2 weeks from now, Shemitah has arrived. Shemitah is coming to an end. So Ki Kara Shemitah Lashem means the Shemitah is becoming, is just inaugurating the Shemitah. So that's when the Yisr of Lo Yigo supplies. It's a razzle-dazzle chiddush of the Rosh. So the Echavarim point out that according to this Rosh, we have a tremendous Chumrah. It's too late to write Pruz Bulls. We missed it by almost a year because writing a Pruz Bull now, we're still bound by the Yisr of Lo Yigo. It means Lo Yigo's already kicked in last year. So we should have written Pruz Bulls last year. That was the correct time to write Pruz Bulls according to the Shita of the Rosh.
But maybe what the Rosh are saying, that if at the time now, when the end is coming, it's retroactive back to the beginning. My Isser of not going to him applies when it goes off, it's going to go off the books in a year. But if it's not the goal of the books in the year, maybe
Kikarov
is not necessarily...
Okay, we're usually not in the business of darshaning sukkim. That's usually we leave that to the Tanarim and then we run. The Rosh is a chiddush, and he's trying to give you a drasha. The Rosh is not making it up. He's trying to say pshat and tasef. He's trying to figure out how to chazal this tasef to know this halacha, that the Yisrael Ligo starts at the beginning. So if you accept the Rosh, then Yitaka should have written a prosbul last year. If you reject the Rosh, then you write a prosbul in the next 2 weeks or so. So how do we pass in the halacha? So in Shulchan Aruch, the Rosh is not quoted. So the conventional poskim didn't accept the Rosh. Conventional wisdom was like the Rambam, like the Shulchan Aruch, that one doesn't require prosbul, did not require prosbul last year. Nevertheless, there were some achronim who had such a chumrah, there were some achronim who thought that the correct thing to do was to follow such a chumrah, to write a prosbul last year. So there are some people, some Yechidei school out there who wrote prosbuls last year, and then they're going to write another prosbul this year in case they lent money in the interim. But most people don't have that practice. The Chassam Sofer writes that he used to observe his Rebbe. He was a Talmud Muvikar from Nosson Adler. So he writes that he used to follow his Rebbe around and will watch him all his different hanhagos. And he says his Rebbe was very machmer in a lot of things, and he wasn't machmer in this. He said he never saw that his Rebbe wrote a prosbul before Erev Rosh Hashanah of the beginning of the Shnas Hashemitah. So that's what our minig is. Most people did not write prosbuls last year. I remember I got an interesting call from somebody 6 years ago. It was the year after the Matzah Shemitah. They called me in Erev Hashanah, they wanted to write a Pruz Bul. So I thought I was missing something, and they were missing something. So there's one day in Rishonim who says that we're off on the Shemitah year. There's Machlekes Rashi and Tosfos, which year is the Shemitah year? So maybe they were being chashed for that. I know what they wanted from me. So finally they explained to me what they wanted. They remembered up as writing a Pruz Bul 2 years before, and they remembered writing a Pruz Bul the year before. They got a little confused. They thought that the din is every Erev Rosh Hashanah, you have to write a Pruz Bul. They thought you have a Taras Nadarim, you go to the Mikveh Erev Hashanah, you say Slichas. So they thought that that's part of the protocol of Erev Hashanah. Got very, very mixed up. So I try to explain to them they should come back in either 6 or 7 years or 5 years, depending on what they're going to... Anyway, whatever it is. they haven't called me yet.
If you would write one at the beginning of the Shemitah year, then you would be allowed to collect...
You would be able to collect all chovos that preceded the Pruz Bul, but
right.
Any chov that's post the Pruz Bul would be a problem.
Go around and bother you or the Lovev or...
Yeah, according to the Rosh. Yeah, but again, if we paskin that you don't need it, we paskin against the Rosh. Nothing happens at the beginning of the Shemitah year. Everything is miket sheva shorim shatas. There's no purpose to do it. Most of us, I didn't write one. Most people don't write one.
According to the Rosh, second stage where the loan is wiped out, practically speaking, what's the difference between before Rosh Hashanah and after Rosh Hashanah?
So we'll see. Okay, so practically speaking, it means as follows. Let's say if the guy comes and he volunteers to pay, so if it's after Rosh Hashanah of the Matzah Shemitah, then the Malv has to say, no, I don't want it, you don't have to pay, it's Meshamah. Then if the guy pushes the money down my throat, then I'm allowed to take it. But before the Rosh Hashanah of the Matzah Shemitah, I'm not going to do that. That means he gives me the money, thank you very much, put it in my pocket. That's what the Rosh writes. There is an important ha'ara that could be relevant for us living in America in terms of the proper time to write a prusbel, and that's the following question. What would the halacha be as follows? You have a guy, not, as we all know, the same people who are standing by the post office at 11:59 and April 15th, so those are the people who are writing the prusbels Erev Rosh Hashanah, as they're running to Mincha, they're writing the prusbels. So a guy was very busy in the morning, you know, he had to go to the mikveh early, he wanted to beat the rush, and he has said, long slichas, and has a taras nadarim, and he's fasting, and this guy, it's 2-3 o'clock, the afternoon, finally remembers, he hasn't yet written a prusbel. So he goes, convenes a bezin, he writes, chick-chack, writes his prusbel. One small technical problem, one of the people who owes him money happens to be in Eretz Yisrael right now. And for that person who's living in Eretz Yisrael, so that person is already, he's saying Riddle of David Mizmor, he's already finishing Davening Ma'ariv on Rosh Hashanah night. So Rosh Hashanah has already begun for the Loveh, but Rosh Hashanah has not yet begun for the Malveh. So what point exactly does Shemitah cancel? Does Shemitah cancel from the vantage point the time zone of the Malveh, the time zone of the Loveh? It sounds like a Chometz Shaila. If the guy owns Chometz is in America, he has Chometz in Eretz Yisrael, so what's the din? So Rav Shlomo Zalman writes in a shul that he doesn't know. He says he's not sure what the din is. So we don't have any precedent for this. There's no Shulchan Aruch doesn't know about it. So he says he throws his hands up. He says he's not sure what the halacha is. So therefore he says, one should therefore be machmir, one should try to be careful to write a prusbel in enough time that make sure anyone who's in the furthest time zones east of you, it's already not yet Rosh Hashanah. I thought that the pashtus is that it should depend on a lumdish shaila as to what the nature of the whole din of Shemitah Kesafim is all about. I mean, there are two different aspects of Shemitah Kesafim, like the Rosh already told us, that there's an aspect that there's an issur of lo yigos, which is an issur on the malveh, and then there's a second halacha that the chov is cancelled. So there's a big question in the Rishonim, what's the relationship between those two? Do those two necessarily go hand in hand, or one emanates from the other? We'll talk about that a little bit further on in some of the shiurim. So I thought that if the nature of the Shemitah is basically speaking to the Malveh, that's where the Issa really starts. And if the Shemitah begins with the Malveh, and the cancellation of the Chov is, in a sense, stems from the Issa of Negisa that the Malveh has, so then L'chor, you follow the Malveh. That means the Torah is speaking to the Malveh, lo yigos. So the Malveh turns around to the Rebbe Shlomo and says, it's not Rosh Hashanah yet. So what do you mean, lo yigos? Why can't I be Nogis the Chov? That means the din of Shemitah didn't begin yet for me. However, if you hold that Shemitah is not primarily Malveh oriented, that Shemitah is primarily Chashem Mishpat oriented, that the Chov disappears. The Torah says that when the Shemitah comes, so there's no Chov anymore finished. So there are two halachas. There's a Nisr in Yeradeya for the Malveh to be Nogis. And then there's a din of Chashem Mishpat, that the Chov disappears into thin air. Irrelevant to the Yisra Negisa. There are two different halachas. According to the Rosh, the two different halachas happen a year apart. So if these are two different halachas, they have nothing to do with each other. They happen to both coincide at the same moment. So the cancellation of the Chov, one could conceive that from the Lova's point of view, the Chov is over, so the Lova's off scot-free, finished. Even though from the Malva's point, it's not yet Rosh Hashanah, but if Klapi the Lova, it's already Rosh Hashanah, the Chov is over, so it's not too late. So again, this suffix that Rosh Shlomo Zalman has may be related to a more general question about who exactly should be this Kesafim is talking to. Is it primarily speaking to the Malveh? Is it primarily speaking to the Loveh? Whatever the case is, L'maish of Shlomo Zalman throws his hands up, so we're not going to be Machmir the Shaila. So therefore, one should try to be Machmir this. One should try to be careful to write a prusbel, not literally at the last minute.
And what would happen if that didn't happen? Guy comes to you to spend it.
Right, so you have a big shiloh when you have these suffix, when you have these suffix prusbels, it's a big shiloh. What do you do when you have suffix? If you say motzi mechamel of Ryan, we'll talk about that hopefully a little more. There's a rush about that also. But let's get them. There are a couple of important things to be aware of in terms of the timing of the prusbel, and that's the fact that the prusbel has to be dated properly. If the prusbel is dated incorrectly, that can throw into question the very validity of the prusbel. So the Mishnah says in the end of Masechta Shviyos that there are two different mistakes you can make in terms of dating a prusbel. You can make what's called a shtar muktam, or you can make what's called a shtar meuchar. So shtar muktam means that you dated it too early. It means, let's say, what's today? What's the same document? 14th of Elul. Okay, good. 14th, okay. So let's say if a person would write a prusbel today and they would date it the 12th of Elul. That would be a shtar muktam. But let's say you would write a prusbel today and date it the 16th of Elul. So that would be a shtar meuchar. So what's the difference between the two? So the Mishnah says that a prusbel hamuktam is kosher. That if you write a prusbel and you dated it too early, it says nishkafela. Why? Because a prusbul that's dated early is not going to cost the lova anything, because a prusbul is only acceptable, it's only kosher for all chovos that preceded the date on the prusbul. If I lend money to you, if I write a prusbul today and I lend money to somebody tomorrow, so then obviously I'm going to have a new prusbul. So if I made a mistake and I wrote an earlier date on the prusbul, so I ruined it for myself. I messed myself up, because if by some chance, if I lent money to somebody last night, so it won't be covered by the prusbul. So by writing an early prusbul, I made matters worse for myself. I could do it if I want to mess myself up. That's okay. I can do whatever I want. But if I write a later prusbul, if I write a prusbul meuchar, so then I'm going to potentially collecting money that I'm not entitled to, because Beis Din's going to look at this prusbul in 6 months from now. They're going to see it's dated 25th day of Elul. So that means any chov that took place between the 14th and the 25th of Elul, Beis Din's going to collect with this prusbul. And that's shalaka din, because the prusbul doesn't apply to any chov that took place post the writing of the prusbul itself. So whenever you have a prusbul that's post dated, so you're going to be collecting money potentially shalaka halacha. We have a rule in Hachashtaros. Whenever you write up a document that has potential to be misused, that can potentially be used in a dishonest fashion, so that document's bottled. That document is null and void. Even though I'm not going to lend anybody money in those days. It doesn't matter. The shtar is considered to be possible, and you would have to write up a new one. So the halacha, you have to be careful when you write a prusbul not to mess up on the day. And if you mess up on the day, so then mess it up early. Don't mess it up late. Remember last Shemitah, so somebody showed me a prusbul that they wrote, and it was tapa dated wrong. They dated it, said the calendar, the washer was the wrong day. They dated it the next day. I told them they have to rip it up and write over again. I said, it's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says beferish that a prusbul hama'uchar is possible.
Wouldn't it logically make sense that all prusbuls should be set up, no matter when you write them, the date should be Erev Rosh Hashanah? So that's logic, because that's when it's supposed to...
No, but you can't do that, because that's only if you actually do the Mesiris Achob at Erev Rosh Hashanah. If I do the Mesiris, if I'm doing it...
You make it tonight that it's the Mesiris Achob and it's Chal Erev
Rosh Hashanah. Because it should be Chal Erev Rosh Hashanah.
Because that's when you want all your...
Right. I don't know. There is a question whether a prusbul can be written at night or not. Why should anybody think that a prusbul can be written at night? Because usually a basin doesn't function at night. So here, most of the posts can assume that doesn't apply to prusbul. Basing on the Gemara Maseches Nedarim, the Gemara speaks about you can have a basin of Ataras Nedarim, you can do Ataras Nedarim even at night, even Lechetchilu, the Gemara says. So what do you see from that Gemara? You see that the term basin doesn't always mean the same thing in all areas of Halacha. So basin for Ataras Nedarim is not basin of Paskining, they're not being Machariah, it's not being Imam, it's not being Nefashah, it's not Kiddush HaChodesh. They're just a Maisa, it's a Maisa basin, the Alma, that the basin, the three guys have to be present, serving as a basin, so that's acceptable at night. That's what many poskim extrapolate from the other prusbul as well. The Gemara doesn't speak about a Befeish, Shachnach doesn't mention a Befeish, but I think most poskim assume that a prusbul can in fact be written at night. Those who say that a prusbul can be written at night because they base themselves on the comparison to Ataras Nedarim, then probably some of the other kulas of Ataras Nedarim would apply as well. Namely, that even a karav would be acceptable. The Gemara says in Nedarim that you can have relatives sitting on a bezin for Ataras Nedarim, that would be okay. So then presumably the same would be true when it comes to a prusbul. If you question this whole kula, if you say that no, that who says prusbul and Ataras Nedarim are the same, so then you would have to disqualify a prusbul written at night, you would have to disqualify a prusbul written and signed by karavim.
There's no issue of having a
carve
on a basin.
I mean, again, that a carve is allowed to be one of the dayanim. There is a chumra that some have that you shouldn't have two dayanim who are krovim to one another. That if the dayan is a carve to me, that's okay. But if the dayan is a carve to the other dayan, so then that's not considered to be a shame based in bechlal. When there's a korva within the based in itself, that's already a chumra. That's a chumra biyama. If you would accept that chumra, then that chumra would carry over to a based in a prosbul.
Didn't we have that whole discussion?
Right. So that's a question. How much can we extrapolate from Ataras Nedarim? The Gemara never has any comparison between the two, but some many poskim did pick up on that idea that it's a Beis Din that's not quite serving, because again, the role of the Beis Din, they're not Paskin and Shilas. There's no Din Torah taking place by a prusbul. It's a nice Beis Din Miyama. So maybe that would be sufficient even in Balayla. It's clear that if one wants to write a prusbul early, not to date it early, but to write it early, you don't have to write a prusbul day before Rosh Hashanah. You don't have to write a Chodesh Elul. You could write. You want to write a prusbul in June? That's also acceptable. There's no reason that it has to be the end. It doesn't make sense to write it so early, because if you're going to write it early, then you're going to mess yourself up if you lend money afterwards. But if you want to write it early, you can write it early. So apparently, there was once a certain Rosh Hashanah was saying a whole shiur, a whole razzle dazzle shiur about about how a Prizbul has to be written within 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. If you write it before, then it's no good. It's a whole razzle-dazzle mahalach. We try to explain why it's impossible to write a Prizbul before 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. So I think the way the story goes is that apparently the Chazanish was listening to the Shir, and afterwards the Chazanish walked over to him and he whispered in his ear, it's a Mishnah in Mayakotan. The Mishnah in Mayakotan says that you're allowed to write a Prizbul on Chol HaMoed. It's one of the shtaros that the Mishnah says you're allowed to write in Chol HaMoed. It's a Dover Ovik. If you don't write it now, who knows? The Eidim will be around. So the Chazanish said to him, I don't remember that there should be a Chol HaMoed within Chodesh Elul. So by definition, you're allowed to write a Prizbul before 30 days. There is an important halacha concerning Prizbul, and that's the requirement of karka. So the Mishnah says in Maseches Shviyas, the end of the Mishnah is in Shviyas, that the lova has to own karka. If the lova doesn't own a small amount of karka, then the whole Prizbul is not acceptable. Why is that? Mechates, what does owning karka have to do with anything? So here the Rishonim have machlok is what this halacha is based on. So Rashi writes that it's based on the principle of Milsad Lo Shchicha. So we know that in general we find that the Chachamim only institute dinim derabban in normal circumstances. It was supposed to be normal in this world. So the Chachamim wanted, they helped us out when everything is being functioning in a normal fashion. Guy does something out of the ordinary. Guy says, I should have taken a case one in a million years. So then the Takhan HaSacham usually weren't instituted under these circumstances. So to imagine to lend a guy money, the guy doesn't have any karka to back it up. So who would ever lend money to somebody if the loba doesn't own any karka? It's lo yitachein. Especially in the days of Chazal, it was mamash impossible. This would be such a concept. I'm going to lend money to somebody if he doesn't have a karka. So that's called the Milsad Lo Shchicha. Milsad Lo Shchicha of the Be'er Bona Takanta. That's how Rashi and Tosis and Maseches Gittin understand this halacha. So the Rashi in his Perisha Mishnayis and Shviyas has a different twist to this halacha. He says the reason why the halacha requires karka is for the following reason, that we already mentioned that Prizbul is basically a takanas hachamim, but the concept of having a chov that's not canceled by Shemitah already exists midaraisa. If the chov was basically paid up already, we'll talk about this a little bit more biarichas maybe next week's shiur. If it's already gavoy, if the chov was already paid up, like the Gemara speaks about, let's say the Malva has a mashko, the Malva is holding onto a collateral, so he's got the chov ready in his hands, it's already a done deal. So the Yisrael Yigos doesn't apply. The din of Shemitah's ksav only applies if the chov it's come time to pay back the chov, but he hasn't paid back yet, and the Malva really doesn't have anything to go on. So, min haTorah, if the lova has karka, that's not considered to be enough that the malva is holding on to the chov. Midaraisa, you have to mamish have the chov itself paid, have a mashko, whatever, mosher shtos lebeis, whatever the definitions of gavi biyadcha are. But midarabanan, the chachamim said that, well, if the lova owns karka, so then it's almost a done deal already. If the lova doesn't own any karka, so it's going to be hard to collect the chov from him. What am I going to get from him? I'm going to get from his car, he'll drive the car to somewhere else. When I collect from his furniture, he'll sell his furniture. So it's going to be hard for me to collect him. The only thing which I'll be able to for sure get is going to be his real estate. So therefore, when you have a chov against karka, so that's a little bit more kegavli. It's not kegavli midaraisa, it's not really kegavli, but it's enough midarabanan that the chachamim are willing to look the other way and say, well, it's to the Prizbul. So they only instituted the Prizbul in a situation where the Chov is almost paru anyway, it's almost gavli anyway. My left communion between Rashi and the Rash, at the end of the day, the Mishnah says beferish that the Lova has to own karka. So who cares whether it's based on Milsad Lo Shchicha, whether it's based on Kikovui. So the Ran writes in Maseches Gittin and Shechap the following Nafkamina. Let's say the person owns karka b'shas k'sivas ha-Prizbul, but doesn't own karka when Rosh Hashanah comes. So is that considered to be acceptable or not? So if you like Rashi, that the Takanas HaChamim requires the owning of karka just to be labeled as a milsa de shchicha, so then good enough. So that's okay. So that's called a milsa de shchicha and finish. B'shas k'sivas ha-Prizbul. What happens tomorrow? I don't care what happens tomorrow. Masha'inkin, if you hold like the Ran, that the whole idea of owning karka is that it has to belong to the person b'shas Rosh Hashanah. That means if you hold like the Rash, that the whole purpose of the owning of the karka is to declare the chov to be kegavli, so then the moment, the critical moment in time is Erev Rosh Hashanah. The critical moment is not 6 weeks in advance when I write the Prizbul. So if the Lova owns karka a month before and then he sells his karka subsequently, and now b'shas Rosh Hashanah he doesn't own any karka, so then that's not an acceptable Prizbul. So l'chor, that should be the nafkamina ladina between Rashi and the Rash. So I'll go put whatever it is, the owning of the karka for sure is necessary. Whether it has to be sufficient to own a b'shas ha-Prizbul, whether it's necessary to own it until Rosh Hashanah itself, that would be subject to this machlokes. How much karka must the lova own in order for the Prizbul to be acceptable? So the Gemara says, Mamasha Kolshehu, the smallest amount, the Mashu Shebe Mashu, is good enough in order for a Prizbul to be acceptable. Why is that? So the Rishonim give different reasons why. That some Rishonim say that in theory, even the smallest amount of karka, you can collect the $10 million chov from. Let's say if you owe me $10 million and you only own a quarter's worth of karka, so I'm going to go and collect that 25 cents worth of karka. Then in a week from now, when you get some money, so you're going to buy back that karka from me because you want your land back. So then I'll go ahead and go after you again. And I'll go collect the quarter's worth of karka a second time. And I'll keep on doing it a million times. So until a million times, 10 million times, four, whatever. It'll end up till I get all my money back. So in theory, any small mashu of karka could potentially turn into a very, very big chov. So therefore, the chachamim were misaken and a low plug, that even the smallest amount of karka doesn't matter. As long as the lova owns karka, that's good enough. So that's how we pass in halacha, that we have to make sure when we write prusbles that the lova, in fact, owns karka. The owning of karka doesn't mean even literally owning. Even if a person rents karka, that would also, for these purposes, the Gemara says, that's also considered to be, quote-unquote, owning karka. So most people either own karka, either they own the houses, or they rent the houses, so that's also considered to be owning karka, or people own karka for kvura, whatever. Most people have a little bit of karka somewhere. But the problem is, very often you run into situations like yeshiva bachrim. So a guy is a single guy, so he doesn't own karka, he doesn't own karka, he doesn't rent karka, there's nothing. And he wants to write a prusbul. He's the loven, and they want to write a prusbul against him. He borrowed $100 from his friend, they want to write a prusbul. The guy, mamash, doesn't own any karka. So what does he own? He owns his bed, he owns his dormitory room. What does he own? What does he rent? So the poskim say that probably doesn't work, because we spoke about the Hilchos Mezuzah, when you rent a room from a dormitory, so you're not even renting that room itself, they can throw you out of the room in a second. If I rent an apartment, so I have a lease, sign a lease, and then I have the apartment for the next year, they can't throw me out. So that's considered to be enough, quote-unquote, owning karka for the purposes of prusbul. But if I don't even have a lease, I'm just have an agreement with the yeshiva, I sign something with the yeshiva saying that they're going to give me a room so they can move me out of the dorm whenever they want, so they can move me out of the dorm, that's a problem. So that's going to throw into question. That was the Moshe Schwartz, the Rebbe, the Mezuzah Shalom. So that throws into question the whole validity of the prusbul for yeshiva bachrim. So it's not a problem. I remember one year, one shmita in yeshiva, must have been two, 3 shmitas ago. So they were tumbling about the lockers. If a guy rents a locker for $3 from SOI, so whether that's considered to be karka. So I think it depended on the different lockers. Some of the lockers are built into the ground, and some of them are movable. So apparently the ones in the base medrash, in the main base medrash, for many years people thought they were built into the ground, until one summer they disappeared. Remember one year they took them all out and they stuck them in the little coat room on the side across the hall from the base medrash. So we realized that all the prusbles that were written in those lockers were bottle. So I think the ones in first hall are still connected. I think they're built into the system, into the wall itself. So maybe one can argue that's considered to be karka. The question is that really true? If I give $3 to SOI to rent a locker, and let's say the head of SOI, for those who are not in yeshiva, student organization in yeshiva, they're the ones who rent that lockers for us. So if the guy, the president of SOI, decides, no, he wants to switch lockers on me, he can't do it. I can take it to a court, I can take it to a din Torah, to the locker. It's hard to believe that I'm renting this particular locker. I'm giving $3 to. Maybe the price has gone up. When I came to yeshiva, it was $3 a lakum. The number of inflation is probably more than that by now. Anyways, I don't know whether that would really count. So it's tough. Yeshiva bachim have the biggest problem in terms of writing prusbols. It's not a problem for the it's not a problem that the ma'av has to own karka. The lova has to own karka. So how do you get around this problem? So here the Mishnah tells us the only way to do it is to be mezaka karka, that we have to give karka to the lova. So if the lova is in front of us, we'll give him a piece of karka. If he's not here, so we'll make a kinyan suda with somebody else. Somebody else should be zocha on the karka on behalf of the lova. Leis Breira, what are you going to do? So the Ran and Masechus Gittin asks, why is that his chus exactly? Why exactly is that beneficial? It means fakir. If he doesn't own the karka, then there's no prusbul. There's no prusbul, then haha, then he doesn't have to pay back the chov. So giving him the little tiny piece of karka in your backyard is going to ruin it for him. It's going to force him to pay back his $10,000 chov. So why is that considered to be a schus? So the Ran has 2 days in Gittin. So one day in the Ran is, he says, yeah, it's taka, not a schus. But this is prusbul. This is a derabana. These are very, 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 very making of prusbul. And mikule prusbul shanukan. It means, prusbul, we look the other way. It doesn't have to be so formal, cheshe mishpat schus. And then the Ran says, no, this really works in cheshe mishpat. Because zoch and the adam shal b'fanav is defined right now. Right now, is it good to own karka? Of course it's good to own karka. It's going to cost you in six weeks from now. Well, 6 weeks, we'll worry about 6 weeks from now. But Hilchos Zochah, the Neshlo B'Fanav, is defined by the present moment. So that would qualify as an acceptable Zchus. So again, Once again, no matter how you slice it, the Mishnah says it works. The Mishnah says you give me mazaka karki to somebody, that's what we do. So again, for most people, it's not necessary to do this, because most people own or rent have some shaykhs to karka. But if you're dealing with somebody who taka doesn't have any shaykhs to karka, then you would run into this little bit of a problem, so you would have to get around this in such a way.
Well, why can't we say country? That is, otherwise, it's not nilas, delas, may love on people who wouldn't lend if you didn't have the karka. So he wants to lend money, so it is.
Right, I see. I mean, it is a little bit schus. Maybe. Maybe it is. Okay, so at the end of the day, so that's what we have in our text of the Prisbul. What is it saying? We have the text?
So
we have the text of the Prisbul that's going to follow the Shia.
But when you're coming in, the basin's going to be Zaka, people they don't even know. It's just
a Brei Rishayla. It's a Brei Rishayla.
You're not supposed to know your mouth.
Yeah.
Who's being mezaka, the Malva or the Beis?
So, if the Malva owns karka, then the Malva can do it. If the Beis then owns karka, then the Beis can do it. Anyone can do it. So, according to this document that we're about to sign, to enable this process, we have conveyed a minimal plot of land on a temporary basis via a valid kitchen procedure to any and all debtors who do not possess any real estate.
That's the Beis
doing it. Right. That's what it sounds like.
That's the one we normally saw.
Yeah, this is the one that was just written up last night. this is the now convening Basin of Bergenfield.
This is not the one that you see.
Well, it's not the one floating. It's not the RCA's. Yes.
It's not floating around.
This is the.
It's not
it can't be.
One.
It can't be floating. It was just came. It was just printed last night.
any mention about karka? That's what I mean.
The regular ones, right. Many of them don't mention karka, and it's just left to the discretion of the malva. If the malva knows that he lent money to some yeshiva guy, so again, 99.9% of the time, the karka is irrelevant. Most people have karka, but karka, the rent that are owned or something. But in a situation where you don't have karka, then you have a problem. Okay.
Temporary period of time is from the writing of.
Yeah, so it says here that this kinyan shall cease on the day following Rosh Hashanah 5769. Right. Right. We don't want the guy to walk into my backyard after that, but until then, he can. I remember when I was in high school, so this goes back already, must have been four Shemitahs, right, it was the year of Bichas Hachama, right, so it goes back 28 years ago. So, I was in 10th grade, so it was a Shemitah, it was Matzor Shemitah. You doing the math for me?
No.
What? I'm sorry, I was in 10th grade. I remember why, because my high school switched when I was in 10th grade. In 11th grade, they moved to Queens, so this story took place in Riverdale, so I remember. So anyway, whatever it was, so we were getting ready a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah. We had a whole shiur about writing principles. All the yeshiva guys, everyone's getting excited. It's the first principle ever that I wrote in my mitzvah, the principle before I was 8 years old. So we were getting ready to write principles. And someone was ma'ora the fact that, wait a second, what kind of joke is this writing principles? The yeshiva guys are all, none of them have any karka. The whole thing is a joke. It's not going to work anyway. So, gavalt, it's crisis in the principle in the Beis Din. So, at the time, Rabbi Riskin was the head. He was the dean of the Siftar Torah at the time in Riverdale. So he came to the rescue. He said he's going to be machna everybody karka. So everyone's thinking, you get a piece of real estate on the Upper West Side. So he said, no, better than that. He says, there's this new development that's taking place in Eretz Yisrael that was literally a couple of rocks at the time. It was called Efrat. And Kachava, he was mocked to every bachur in yeshiva, a little mashu, a corner of a 2x0 in the corner of his plot of land in Efrat. Now it's probably worth a nice penny, but at the time it was literally mamasha shooting a hole in the ground, and that was it. That was the karka. That was that each person, each loba had at the time. So again, you don't have to own that much karka. A little bit of a mashu karka is also good. I remember last. Yeah, so that I don't remember. I don't remember him being an Indian giver. I remember he gave it to us. Leo and Vaughn was there. I remember last Shemitah I had a little bit of an issue. Last Shemitah, I found myself in a funny situation where I wasn't convinced that I had any karka. Last Shemitah, I was still the Rav in Paramus, and we weren't renting the house from the shul. It was the shul's house, and we were living in. And when you live in the shul's house, that's not so posh, that's called the relationship of a renter. You could argue maybe that is renting, because you're, instead of paying, so you're working. So not so posh, that's really true. So the Shemitah before, so we lived in the Heights, I rented an apartment. Okay, so that was good. But that particular Shemitah, when I didn't own any karka, and I didn't rent any karka, so I was a little bit nervous about what to do. So I was cowing a piece of karka from somebody. That in case I didn't think that I owed anybody any money, but I was a malva, and I wanted to write a principle against that somebody owed me money, so I wanted to make sure that I had karka, so I would be able to, I would be enabled to be marked in that karka to any prospective alova who didn't have karka. So I'm not mistaken, I think my brother-in-law had bought a house before me, so he had a little piece of karka, so I own, I think he sold the house since then, but except for that one piece that I own, so I still own a small, small corner of some lot somewhere in Passaic, so I'll track it down someday.
Said that there was a problem in Eretz Yisrael being mocked the land because unless it's recorded,
right.
It's not a valid transaction.
Right. Yeah, the question is this a plot? I don't think this would apply for that. I mean, Lamai, so these kinds of Kenyanic characters we do all the time are for these purposes, I think it's enough. For that, the Mechira, maybe, yeah, maybe no, but for this principal stuff, there would be, again, 99.99% of the time, none of this is relevant. Anyone's borrowing significant amounts of money that we really want principles for, so it's going to have karka anyway. If it doesn't have karka, as Rashi says, Yitaka shouldn't be lending him money in the first place. So, again, for most people, this is not going to be relevant. But for our token principles, that many of us just write principles, even though we don't really know anybody else's this money, so those kinds of principles, so we rely on all these kind of games in terms of
being
principles
if we know no one owes us money.
We don't. If you're really honest to goodness, know that nobody owes you money, then you don't have to write a principle. But if sometimes people do, you forget. Then you remember that they have to assure that you lent the guy $100. Somebody just called me the other day that they owe their parents a lot of money, that they borrowed a lot of money from their parents for school loans, and they want to know should they encourage their parents to write a principle. I said, maybe you should discourage your parents from writing a principle. I said you should encourage them to write a principle. I said, they'll be able to have to rush down, but they should have a principle. Because otherwise, if they don't have a principle, even though the aloch is, obviously the guy is going to pay back his, obviously the guy will pay back his parents, but af apichein, there will be, if they don't write a principle, and the parents ever say to him, 6 months from now, by the way, when you get a chance, can you pay us back, start to pay back, that would be a violation of the din of lo yigos. That just stop to ask for the chob, even in a very nice way, would be a mamash and issa gomer of lo yigos. So therefore, we would recommend, if you have any chashash, that somebody may owe you any type of money whatsoever, that we'll talk a little bit, Mietzshim, next week, we'll talk about some very, very common shilas for people, let's say, doctors have the shilas all the time. That means you send out bills, other people, you have a business, you send out a bill to somebody, you have a Jewish patient, he hasn't paid back yet. So do you need a principle for that? Is that considered like a chob also? So is that a chob that's subject to shmita? That could be a serious problem for a lot of people. So we're going to recommend that. Again, we'll talk about hopefully the details next week. We're going to recommend that people should write principles, even if they don't necessarily know if a particular person will borrow money from them. It's always, you have nothing to lose. It takes you about 3 seconds to write a principle. So I think it's a good idea. I think so.